So my guitar came in like 5 minutes ago.
Yeah. Thankfully. He was like waiting. He just couldn't stop staring out the window.
I've been waiting for like 5 hours, man.
Yeah.
Changing out guitar strings.
Until now.
It has been. You know what? You know, it's because Sandykins decided to show up, and then that's when the UPS guy came.
And it's like Christmas in March.
It is like Christmas in March. It looked all right, I feel like. The guitar was pretty good. Oh, you're very nice. But, you know. Yeah, the UPS guy came by once when he saw, you know, Sandykins walk in. He's like, now I can go in.
Yeah, I'm sure that's what it was.
That's basically what happens.
So, home.
Welcome to another episode of Two Bros, One Flick. Andy and Sam here as always.
What's up?
How's it going, Sam?
Pretty good. How are you?
Good, good, good. Well, now that I have my damn guitar, Jesus. But now let's talk about our new guest, our very first time guest, first solo woman act.
Yeah.
She's like the Lady Gaga of our times. Woo! We got Sandykins in the house. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good, good.
So excited.
Are you really?
Yes. Yeah.
The myth, the mystique is gone now that you realize where we record this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think that's true.
Yeah.
I do.
Like
do.
Trash.
Right. Literally, yeah. We are talking right next to a bag of tortilla chips.
This is a perfect location.
Yeah.
Art can happen anywhere.
Art can happen anywhere. Right. So, you know, like usually we'll make Sam give us the juicy details of this podcast and about like the general arc of this whole story.
Okay.
But I guess everyone's going to wonder why you decided now to show up to the podcast. And it's because we're going to talk about the TV series on HBO that came out in 2014, True Detective.
Yep.
Right. So how did this all come about with you, Sandykins?
So I actually heard about it from you and Sam. And
right.
One weekend y'all were like, oh, like there's this new show. You should definitely check it out. And
yeah. And
it was a Sunday night, and I can't remember why, but I had to miss, for whatever reason,
the first two episodes. Yeah.
And so, you know, you were like, I have the first two episodes. You've got to watch them. Yeah. They're great. And so I'm like a sucker for anything with HBO usually.
Yeah.
And so, I pretty much like just sat all in one sitting for 2 hours straight and watched the entire two episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And was just absolutely hooked after that. And
yeah,
I was
yeah.
like, I was the person that would show up every Sunday watching it with y'all and was like, okay, here's my theory. I can't believe this is happening.
Yeah. There's so many things you can go around with a theory too, which is probably one of the better parts of this series. But mm-hmm. It was like, I think we invited you because it's like, hey, you know, you would love this show. I think I texted
yes.
you that. But also it's like a double feature with like Walking Dead on
yes,
Sundays
yeah,
too.
Yeah, so it's perfect.
I'm pretty sure we'll do a Walking Dead review at the end of the season.
Oh, I would love that. You know how I feel about zombies.
I know. Sam's a hater, but Sandykins likes it okay.
It'll be one bro and one flick.
Yeah. We'll be going solo. Yeah, well, Jeremy will be back.
One bro and one chick.
One bro, one chick.
Yeah, uh-oh.
We'll make
Sam,
that.
I'm not trying to take your place.
Sam's like, take it for that.
Walking Dead, you can have it. That's a waste of time.
Yeah, but that's good. And we watched it. And it blew our minds. And then now here we are doing our podcast.
Yes.
So Sam, why don't you give us the rundown about True Detectives, who it stars, and a little bit about the author and the director.
Okay, so True Detective is kind of like it's not really noir, but it's like a set in the 90s, and it's about these two detectives
right.
who are investigating a murder that involves some kind of like weird, like Satanist kind of creepy
yeah.
cult. Occult
that was
kind of
my
thing.
Bad. That was UPS texting me that I just got my package.
Yeah,
I'm so sorry.
It was like 7 or 8 minutes late.
These jerks.
But yeah, that's what it's about. And the original crime occurred in 1995. So that was one of the occult murders. And then there's another murder that has occurred in 2012. And the story is kind of told as a flashback, because the detectives who are in like 2012 are trying to learn about what really happened in the 95 murder.
Yeah.
Because some of the details don't add up, and they just want to know why such a specific weird occult murder would start up again like 17 years after the original murder. And it mainly stars Matthew McConaughey and Woody Harrelson. Matthew McConaughey plays like a really super serious straight man who's named Rust Cole, and he's like really like spacey and
sure.
grim all the time. Like,
yeah,
he's not someone you want in a party.
or he could be.
your parties
say.
Like to talk about like how time
he's
is meaningless
circular.
And it's a
yeah.
circle and everything
yeah.
is poop. Yeah,
yeah, sure.
He's definitely cynical.
Yeah, he's super cynical. And then Woody Harrelson plays Marty Hart, who's kind of like a normal, just like Southern detective guy who's kind of a philanderer. He cheats on his wife, and then he cheats on people he's cheating on, I think.
Yeah, which was something so inappropriate. I hated that part.
Yeah, right?
He's not a great role model.
The other thing was I was wondering is how is he getting these ladies?
Yeah.
Because he's not like, it's not like he's like a rich older man. Mm-hmm. He's a cop, right?
Yeah, he's like a normal looking dude. I guess.
Hey,
he's
girls like a guy in uniform.
Really?
he's not in uniform most of the time.
He must be packing some heat.
He's a detective. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, so that's what it's about. And the creator is named Nick Pizzolatto, and he had been trying to make True Detective for a couple of years.
Okay.
He wrote a bunch of novels that are kind of based on a set of novels by Robert W. Chambers, which is called The King in Yellow. Mm-hmm. It's like a collection of short stories. And throughout his books, Nick Pizzolatto's books, and throughout True Detective, there are allusions to kind of the myths that are from Robert W. Chambers' books, like the stuff associated with like the Yellow King and going to Carcosa and like all of the...
And I read about this stuff. It's kind of like the mythos of something that Nick Palazzo really liked when he read. But most people, this isn't common knowledge.
It's
a real thing. It's not a real thing, but it's not like a thing that people kind of know. Like I couldn't talk about Icarus and everyone know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
But with like Yellow King, no one probably has a fucking clue.
Yeah, it's kind of like Dune or one of those things where it, except Dune was popular. Like this was
Dune
not
was
very
popular.
Yeah. It's kind of like a cult favorite.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's pretty grimy.
He was pretty famous for his novel Galveston, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nick Pizzolatto was, yeah.
Which I think I will read after watching True Detective. I think I'm going to buy it.
Yeah, all of his stuff is kind of set in the situation. Like he's pretty singular in terms of theme.
Oh, sure.
Like it's all
really
grimy and kind of gross. And
which is probably why Sandykins was hooked right away.
Yeah, definitely. That's why Sandykins was hooked.
Yeah, you know me.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's about him. And what else? Is there anything else? It's on HBO.
It's on
episodes.
HBO.
Oh, yeah. It's eight episodes. And this is... Nick Pizzolatto said he was going to do a second series and maybe like more going forward. But the first 8 episodes of True Detective are the only ones that are going to star these people, and they're the only ones that are going to follow this storyline.
Each series is going to be standalone.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, like, you won't have to, like, if you miss this entire series when the next series starts, you don't have to really catch up because the next series will be completely different.
Yeah.
Well, and it will star completely different people, too.
And a new director as well.
Yeah.
Which the new director, I also think he did something else. Do you mind looking up the new director? We'll ask Sandykins a question.
I don't know what the new director's name is.
Well, I mean, what about let's talk about the old director. He directed a couple movies that are pretty well known. The director did. Anyway, but Sandykins, do you have anything to add to like this little bit of background? Anything that you read? Let's hear it.
Well, okay, so there's a rumor that they're talking about Brad Pitt. I don't know how
what?
Yeah, for the second season of the new show, but
that'd be cool.
But yeah, so that might just be a rumor. I'm not really sure, but that was interesting. Another fun fact is the book that was written called The Yellow King that one. It actually, like, when the show came out, True Detectives, like 2 or 3 episodes in, that book was being sold. Like, it was a top bestseller.
Uh-huh.
I think people were starting to make the connection right then and there. But no one, it's
they
like you said, no one had heard about it before.
Legit.
And I even looked it up because I was curious. But and then also, Sam kind of mentioned this a little, but there's actually like a magazine called True Detective. And it like came out like in the 1960s, or that was when it was first. And so, you know, this was based on previous stuff.
Yeah.
But I think the way that it was just, I mean, it was just so masterfully created.
Oh, sure.
Like recreated in this HBO.
There's so much stuff that is like, it's mind blowing.
Yeah. Oh, and the fact that it's a span of 17 years and it's all pushed and packed into 8 episodes.
And it's done in a really, it's a well done transition.
Right. Yeah. So I thought that was great.
Yeah, it definitely doesn't feel like something that was, you know, originally from the book and then they just kind of like fit it into a
like
show.
Like contemporary times.
Where they try to like fit in lines or anything like that. It flows very naturally.
Yeah,
and it's very,
definitely.
Yeah, it's very, very well executed. Do you want to go with things you liked?
Yeah, did you have anything about the director? What movies he directed previously?
Oh, that's right. So the director's name is Kerry Fukunaga.
Yep, he is part Asian like me, part Japanese. What's up? That's why I wanted you to say the name.
Yeah, except he was born in Oakland, so.
What a poser.
Minus one. Yeah. But he directed Sin Nombre, and he also directed.
Sin Nombre is the one that I know.
He also directed Jane Eyre, the 2011. Oh, cool. One.
Okay.
So, yeah, he's got some cool directing chops.
Yeah, and I mean, but if you watch, like, Sin Nombre or, like, Jane Eyre, right? Like, I feel like when you're watching True Detective, you're watching a director who seems like he's done it before.
Yeah.
But he's doing it much better than he has in the past.
Okay.
You know, and Sin Nombre is a great movie to check out.
Yeah, he won the 2009 Sundance Best Director Award.
Yeah, that was his big deal. Sin Nombre was the one that broke him out, but he hasn't really been doing much except for that and Jane Eyre, right?
Well, and those are so different. Like, Jane Eyre is like a period piece, but it's way different than anything True Detective has.
True Detective has a life of its own.
Yeah.
And when you're dealing with it like this, it's like, it's almost like a different director.
Yeah.
So. But it's definitely a guy who's been at the helm a while. He says he's not returning for the new one.
Oh, that's a bummer.
But, okay. I mean, Brad Pitt, maybe they're going to try to do like a bigger and better.
They have shoes to fill, though.
They really do.
It could also be like kind of like Alfonso Cuarón refusing to do any more Harry Potter movies because he's like, I'd rather have other directors who are good have a chance to take on this material.
That's true, yeah. And, I mean, his stock's probably gone way up after True Detective because these are 8 episodes. More like on the whole, I think you two would agree, would be like, directed in a fantastic way, shot in a fantastic way.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
Yeah. So, I mean, let's talk about what we'll do it like super macro and we'll bring it back down. So we'll do like what you liked in the series in general. So I guess that means to like you, Sandy Kins, like since you're the guest.
Yes.
What about the series made it special to you, like, you know, in general? What are the things that they did really well that caught your attention from the get-go?
So, okay, there's a couple of things.
Let's hear them.
Okay, so first, I really loved that they could do such a short series, 8 episodes.
Yeah.
And they can craft it with a 17-year period.
Sure.
But not just that. Every single episode had you on your feet. Like, there was not one episode where I was bored. There's not one episode where I was like, oh my gosh, like, this is going slow. Like, what is happening? It was constantly, like, me trying to figure out what was going on. And just, you know, trying to put the pieces together.
That is true. We were watching and talking the whole time. Right. And I was like, yeah.
But also, I really like that, I mean, it's so beautiful, but it's so haunting. Like, the show is eerie. It's so eerie. And, like, there would be nights where I would, like, go home and I'd be, like, so creeped out.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's cult-like and gothic. And I just love that. It's very strange.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think some of our other female friends who watched True Detective were like, I had to keep all the lights on. And stuff.
Yeah. I did too.
some of our male friends did as well. Yeah.
I was like, hey, now. No, but seriously, like, it is, it's haunting and it's, I haven't seen anything like that. There are other shows like Dexter where I've watched him and I'm like, this is kind of creepy and kind of
and
haunting.
Dark,
and there's that sociopath, you know, thing to it. And Bates Motel is like that.
You
very
talked
creepy.
To me about that, yeah.
But this was like unapologetically dark, which is kind of the words that I was using from the beginning.
Sure.
So I think that was a major thing that I...
Nice.
Really liked.
That's awesome. I have another question. I'll bring it around when we go around the whole video. Okay. What about you? What did you like in general with the whole series?
In general, the pacing of the entire show is done really well. I feel like the first couple episodes are a little bit slower because it allows the viewer to become more familiar with. Really, it's just Rust who's like kind of hard to like and hard to get to know. And then also, I think at the end of episode 1, almost everyone was like, oh yeah, Marty Hart, good guy. And then at the end of episode 3, everyone
episode
was like,
three
Marty
is like,
Hart,
he's
kind
an
of
asshole.
A fucking tool. Yeah. But it did that in a really, it didn't do it in like a cheesy way. It did it in like a really.
It wasn't heavy handed.
No, yeah. It's nothing. Yeah. Almost nothing in the show is
for
particularly
sure.
hammy, except for some of the stuff Russ says, but that's really just, that's his personality.
Like, exactly.
Yeah, he can't really help saying stuff like that.
But I have to agree with Sam, like, the character development is like so great. It's only 8 episodes, but they never tell you this is how this character is. You're like telling it your own. Like you're like, this person's creepy and cynical.
Something a lot of contemporary directors forget is that like the point of a lot of filmmaking is to show and not tell. Nick Pizzolatto, the showrunner, cinematographer, I think his name is Adam Arkapaw. The director did a fantastic job at just allowing the viewers to be like, oh, these are the types of people that we're dealing with, and not being like Marty Hart is a total philanderer asshole. You know, like, it just shows you him doing stuff.
Yeah. Well, like, Fukunaga actually also, not only was he a director, he was also, like, the cinematographer on some of the episodes, too.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, it was, like a dual thing.
I think Fukunaga and Adam Arkapow worked together because I think Arkapow's really young. Like, I think he's, like, 28.
Almost like he's, like, a second director.
Yeah, he's, like, 28. He's really young, if I'm remembering correctly. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So I guess I have to talk about my shit. Trying to think what I liked about it in general. I don't want to step on y'all's toes, you know, because it was.
No, please do.
I'm going to stomp on your toes then.
Great.
No, like, I really like the dark aspect of it, but I guess I'll just go as a macro sense that all of the actors that have substantial parts in the series have such stage presence. You know what I mean? Yeah. And like, aside from the two characters who all have powerhouse performances, the wife, you know, like the girlfriends and the bit parts.
Yeah.
I thought the acting on the whole was really, really good.
Everyone was consistent. There weren't any loose ends.
Yeah. And like the
skill in
acting. Even with the, okay, so you guys know this scene.
The police commissioner dude?
Well, that guy was great. Oh, okay. But when Russ goes in to interrogate the guy after they solve the crime, and he's like, I know the Yellow King.
Oh, that guy.
That guy seems like the guy who was at the bar yesterday with the beard.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I was thinking about. Uh-huh. I really think that
guy seemed like they both seem like nice gentlemen. I don't see the problem.
But it was seriously just so good. I agree with you.
Yeah, yeah. Even like tiny parts like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, little bit parts did really well.
And it shot so well. And like living in Louisiana for like 4 years, you know, it really does. It's shot very well. And it gets this like kind of like the essence of being in like the nasty kind of like, it's very much rural where they were shooting. Plus, and it's like that a lot. Yeah.
Plus one thing, not to kind of, I don't know if you guys have listened to our Nebraska review, but there are a lot of shots in True Detective that are like the Nebraska, that are like shots in Nebraska where they just show like highway and a car will drive by. But the way it's handled in True Detective still makes it interesting even after 8 episodes.
Exactly.
Because they do it a little bit in, I think, every episode. Yeah. But it doesn't feel like, oh, great, they're driving again.
Yeah. You know?
Sure. Like that. Sure. Yeah. All right, we're going to shrink it down from one macro level to the next macro level. Which one do you guys prefer? Do you prefer Woody Harrelson's character or Matthew McConaughey's character? What do you think, Sandikins?
Okay, so I'm a little biased.
Okay.
I do like Woody, but I love Matthew McConaughey, and he was brilliant. I think this was something that he did that was different from his other performances. I mean,
right.
We've seen from like all his other work that he really can do like the comedic character. He can do serious, he can do whatever. I mean, he's done such a variety that
he really
adapts whatever you need. And I think that's what makes such a great actor. And I think in this specific like series, I feel like he was just exceptional. Like if you put somebody else and tried to have somebody, I can't think of anybody else that would have been as great.
That's true. Do you think he's going to get the Emmy for it?
Oh, I don't know.
He probably should.
I think he should.
I just feel like
there's really no one else right now.
It's going to be some asshole from Downton Abbey.
I was going to say, I really don't.
I don't think anyone from Downton Abbey would, because at this point, there are no consistent characters except for.
You know a lot about Downton Abbey. I don't know anything.
Yeah,
about
I don't watch that show. But yeah, I think that he truly put on such a great golden performance that maybe handing him out, I'd be like, here you go, take the Emmy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, his character is so complex, which Woody Harrelson's is complex in the sense that he's an asshole.
Yeah.
Do you think he's more likable as a character, or do you think he's just more kind of interesting to watch on screen?
Well, I think both, but I think what really attracted me to his character in this show was the fact that some of the stuff that he was saying, like, I would have to listen to it again because I'm like, what did he just say?
That's what I feel about actually.
Oh, great. Great. What a compliment.
I know. Yeah.
Are you comparing me to Matthew McConaughey?
Yeah, you are.
No, but seriously, he's so well spoken in that show. Like, even if you don't know what he's actually saying,
right?
He could sell you anything.
That's true.
He sold me the part so like he sold it to me right away.
Solid.
I mean, just his mannerisms and how he was carrying it. It's like he actually is really like that, and I wouldn't be surprised if he like.
Well, he's probably not like that given his Oscar speech.
Right. No, but I just meant like
he goes like super goof.
I just meant like. Yeah. He must have had to go and like follow the character or something for a couple of days.
It's almost like a method acting. Yeah.
He totally like adapted.
With that. This one, I would agree with that sentiment with Rust's character in general. So we have one vote for Rust. What say you, Sam?
So at the first episode, I think everyone liked Woody better, but I liked Rust better. And yeah. I liked him throughout the series just because he's pessimistic and entertaining. Also, true. He says really contrived things, which is fun to just listen to. Funny. It's like, I'm glad someone's saying goofy stuff on TV.
Yeah.
We need more goofy stuff about universality and like existential crisis as a 50-year-old, 40-year-old.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So interesting.
I just thought that was good.
Maybe I was going to go with Woody in general.
Okay.
So,
he's a great character.
Well, what's his character's name again?
Marty.
Marty. So I'm going to go with Marty.
Okay.
And I think I'm going to go with Marty because I like Matthew McConaughey's character a lot, especially in the first two episodes because he's different and he's like, you know, like a deep thinker and like kind of very much his own person.
Yeah. Also, I should mention it's probably easier for people to like Matthew McConaughey's character better because he's really the only one doing work on the case for the
first
four or five
episodes. That's true. He's the only one. Yeah.
Like,
well, even when you get to like episode seven,
even toward the end. Yeah. But Marty's just there to not assist him because they're equals, but he's just kind of there to like,
exactly.
Like,
aid.
Facilitate.
So, like,
yeah.
And he's kind of like, it's the dynamic where, you know, they talk about in the series. It's like, well, Marty is the guy who is the one who's kind of like the middleman between the cops and Rust.
Crazy Rust.
Right. Right. But Marty I like in general because the first two episodes of watching Rust, it was really fun. But by the time we got to the third or fourth episode, it was kind of one of those things where it was like, yeah, you know, please be quiet.
Yeah, plus he gets the same. He says continuously more weird stuff.
It gets worse. It's almost like a caricature of himself. But and then the other problem with Marty is that he's a philanderer, right? But you get that from
previews.
You get hints
from
episode two onward, right?
Yeah.
And even episode one, if you're watching closely,
it's too bad. His wife is real cute.
His wife is real cute.
Yeah, that was
who was in the first episode of Luther.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Which, Sandykins, if you haven't seen Luther yet, it's on Netflix.
First episode is worth watching.
Yeah, exactly. But I liked his character a lot because he's kind of a walking hypocrisy.
Yeah.
Right? And he's the guy that gets stuff done, but he really, you know, he assimilates very easily, but for no reason. He's not doing it for any reason except for everyone else is doing the same thing. And he's very much so playing the game, but at the same time, you know, his life isn't as great as you would think it would be.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And there's that, you know, he's all sorts of weak in terms of, I don't know how you would say it. Like, his character has weaknesses all around him, but they're not necessarily like prevalent. Like on the outside, he's very put together.
Do you like that? Like that he's like more human and relatable. Like he is that kind of average.
Yeah, I think so.
Because the other guy,
Rust, is very into like he's very himself and like very, you know. And I like that about Rust's character. But Woody Harrelson is almost like he can't come to grips with the fact that he is kind of like a jerk.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't know what
he
wants.
He's in denial.
Yeah. He's in denial all the time, right? So
it's his life.
I really like that. So you have two really good characters.
Yeah.
It's a vote 2-1 though.
But they're great together. Like,
they're
I don't think
the dynamic is great.
Yeah, one wouldn't have been as good if the other wasn't there to balance them out, I think.
Yeah.
So
oh, yeah, for
I
sure.
Think their dynamic works well just because
for
I think
eight episodes
works well because Marty makes it work well.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, exactly.
Because
exactly.
Like, he could just as easily be like, I want a different partner. This guy is out of his mind.
Well, that's the thing. The other joke is like, I feel like, you know, by the time you get into episode four and Russ starts saying that shit, and then Woody Harrelson's basically like, you're an asshole, right? It's funny, and it never got old to me, even though you know that they're just two very different people.
Yeah.
So I thought the dynamic was really good.
Yeah, definitely.
Now let's move it on to, I'm thinking, so we brought it from favorite character. Let's talk favorite episode. Do you know which one it could be?
Okay, so I'm going to go with probably the one that everyone liked.
Let's hear it.
And that was episode four, and that was the one with the 6-minute
Yeah. Like, oh my God.
That take where it was just a 6 minute shot and they didn't stop it.
Exactly.
And I just remember like sitting on the edge of my seat, like holding my breath because I was like, this is going to end any second now, but it just kept going and going. And it was brilliant the whole way throughout. It didn't lose any stamina or anything.
No, it did not. Yeah. So you're going to go with episode four.
I think it was four, but I think that was my favorite. And that was the halfway point. So it was like,
it's true.
You know, we knew stuff, but not really. And in the back of my mind, I was thinking, oh my gosh, what if it's Russ? Or what if it's Matthew McConaughey? What if it's him?
You're basically screaming that in our living room. Yeah, I was you're very excited. You're doing like your little Sherlock Holmes moment.
You know, it's like, I grew up on it. I'm like, it's the person you least expect.
Yeah.
So I was thinking all kinds of things after that episode. And I guess I was just so excited that even after episode four, which was halfway, I wasn't bored and I was so excited for the next week.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. For sure. And we'll get into least favorite bits in a little bit, Sandy Kins, but it's a very good start. So he's going to do it with episode four. Let's hear it from you, Sam.
My favorite episode is the same. It's the same episode. Nice. Partly because up to that point, like the show is kind of slow moving. Like stuff would happen, but like not a lot of stuff.
Still engaging to watch.
Yeah, not a lot of stuff would happen with respect to the case.
Sure,
it was like they were just like investigating stuff, and they'd find like weird things, but like there wasn't any real push. But the fourth episode gave it a big push. Plus, the 6 minute scene at the end is probably the most impressive camera work I've seen ever.
That's not an understatement.
Like previously, like the only thing I could think of that was that long and kind of good was in Death Proof at the breakfast, like 40 minutes in when the girls are all having breakfast because the camera just pans around and around for like 4 minutes straight.
Right.
And they're just having like goofy conversation. Sure. That was one of my favorite scenes of anything. And like this was really good too because people are like probably talking about it, but what they might not mention is that the camera isn't like in a room or one place for a long time. The camera tracks basically from the inside of a house, outside to the house, across a neighborhood to another house, outside of that house, across the neighborhood, and like above like barriers and stuff. Like it goes through barriers. It's really, really difficult to pull that off.
Oh, for sure.
And they timed it really well. It felt natural throughout. Because, like, I think the first time I watched it, I didn't realize that it was a single shot. I was like, there must have been cuts or something.
I don't think anyone realized it.
Well, because there's so much stuff happening, and Wu-Tang is playing in the background, so you're just jamming to that. But they did it was remarkable. I actually watched the fourth episode again because I wanted to see
it the next Sunday,
again. Yeah. And yeah, that was really, really bonkers. Like,
it was fantastic.
Yeah, I've never seen anything that
I think well it's masterful in the sense that we didn't even know was an effortless 6 minute straight.
Yeah, that must have taken forever to set up properly.
Yeah. Props to everyone involved in that scene. Yeah.
Yeah, because and it's a lot of stuff that happens. Basically, the 6 minute span chases Rust as he runs through a relatively shady neighborhood in which
was the projects
really
it yeah
really
it's all
shady.
It's all like Section 8 or something like
yeah
that.
It's Section 8, it's not a project but like they the cops got called in and basically everyone starts killing each other. It's a very, very chaotic scene, and the fact that it was all done in one shot is just really, really impressive.
It was brilliant.
It was awesome. Yeah I agree. That's good. I'm trying to think. I'm not going to do a number four because I really did like that scene.
It's a great scene.
That was a scene. Uncle Pee-Pee was here with us.
Yeah.
Shout out to Uncle Pee-Pee. Yeah.
Shout out.
Yeah. He was getting kind of bored with the series in general. And then this thing happened, and then he was hooked from then on.
Yeah, the fourth episode really like stepped on the gas.
That was hook, line, and this was the sinker, I feel like.
Yeah.
Like this was the one that just had everyone for sure.
They were so smart to do that though. Like, I mean, halfway through is when you really want people to stay tuned.
That is true.
And you don't want to lose people then.
And about halfway through is when people would start to lose interest.
It was also cool because that's the point where like Rust continuously says stuff like I'm a total badass, and then he just proves it.
Oh yeah. I think for me, I'm gonna go with the last episode.
Okay, that's a great episode.
Last episode for me, there were a couple problems. I think the last episode is probably the one that I'm gonna have the most gripes about in the end. But the last episode, there's a scene where there's a chase involved, right?
Yeah.
And like the last, well, okay, that's not true. The last, except for the last 5 minutes of the show,
episode
like,
eight
of episode eight, right? I think from how is it an hour long? Or is it like 50 minutes long?
I was like, yeah, it was about an hour.
It's
yeah.
probably about an hour, right? So yeah. I'd say from like let's say from like minute 35 to minute 50, it was probably one of the best suspenseful scenes I had seen in a long time from a film or a television show in general.
Yeah.
You know, and that was to me something that was really engaging, and everything that we had wanted to see is culminating at this point, because the whole show to me, going back to a macro level, is that you have this tension and this feeling that they're on the case, and it's all just kind of percolating, right? It's not really boiling over, and episode eight in this part, it starts to really boil over, and you almost wonder if Rust and Marty are kind of losing control of it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So episode eight was really good in that regard.
Yeah, definitely.
And that's my take on it. And now we're going to talk about favorite scene.
Okay.
So are you going to do Sandykins? Is your favorite scene the 6 minute scene again, or do you have another scene that you want to talk about?
I don't know. I think it would probably be the 6 minute.
6 minute scene. That's a solid scene.
Yeah. I just don't know. None of the other ones really stood out so much to me.
Yeah.
As much as that one. So I'd probably say that one.
Yeah. Well, we should talk about Uncle Pee-Pee's favorite scene.
What was Uncle Pee-Pee's favorite
Which
scene?
Is when that girl takes off her shirt for Marty. In episode two.
Yeah, in episode
yeah.
two.
Episode
yeah.
two. Uncle Pee-Pee can thank me for that later.
Yeah. Yeah. Likes yeah.
That, that was his favorite. That was his favorite thing. I think he watched that scene a couple of times.
I think that was the week we had root beer floats.
We too. Had root beer. That's probably like a favorite snack.
Yeah.
It was probably be root beer floats
yeah.
the whole time. Yeah. She blew my jalapeno poppers out of the water.
Oh, whatever. Those were great. Oh, anything with bacon. Nice.
Anything with bacon. Next time we'll do root beer bacon floats.
Oh, yum.
Yeah, yeah. All right, Sam. So what do you think about your scene?
My favorite scene is actually a really goofy set of scenes. It's whenever they take the police commissioner out on the boat.
That's a great scene,
that
though.
That was pretty funny.
Which is episode seven.
Yeah. Basically, they kind of like trick a police commissioner into giving them information. And then whenever he's next to his car and they shoot up his Maserati, that was great too.
That was great. He's also he got his like big fame in Weeds.
Oh, okay, I didn't know that.
He was a cop in Weeds, and he plays a warden of the prison in Orange Is the New Black on Netflix.
Oh, okay.
So his star is kind of rising, even though he's an older fella.
That's cool.
He does a great job.
Yeah, he does a great job, and it's just it's funny because it's like one of the few times in the entire show where it's you're supposed to laugh.
Oh, exactly.
Basically just hazing this dude.
They are. Yeah, that was a good scene.
I like that. That was cool.
I'm going to think my favorite scene. I really, for no reason, I really like the scene where they're planning it out, what they're going to do later on in the series at Rust Bar where he works at with the old man.
Oh, yeah. The old guy.
You know?
Just like super quiet.
Yeah. But that's one scene that I like just because it's kind of like peculiar and like quirky, but my favorite scene is probably when they go and do their first big shootout.
Oh yeah,
don't
want to
spoil
series.
Too much about it.
That was gonna be mine, but
which is episode three?
I think
episode three,
because it was right before the.
It was
episode four.
Before four.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think it's episode three when they do the big shootout.
Yeah, it looks great.
It looks great.
Plus, some of
shot
the kills
well.
In there just look fantastic.
Kills are fantastic.
Yeah.
Very visceral and violent.
I thought it's probably not my favorite, but I really like the scene where right before episode four, where all that goes down in that scene, right before that, when Matthew McConaughey has to like take on the persona of being back into the selling business.
Oh yeah.
I really liked that just because, you know, it was different.
Well, it was gross to me because he was doing so many things to his body.
Yeah.
It was,
no, it was definitely gross, but I liked how, I mean, he was just doing it all for,
it was very gritty
for the job and for.
He's a pro at it,
yeah,
too. That's
was,
the thing.
He was great.
That's what you know. And he pulls out his like, fucking bag of goodies, you know? Oh, my God. That was a great scene in general. You never can tell what Russ going to do.
Yeah, he's crazy.
Yeah. Now, this one's a tough one because I know we like the series so much, but Sandykins, what did you not like about the series in general, and did you have a least favorite episode?
Okay, so I think my least favorite episode was actually the finale.
Really?
Yes.
Ooh, that's good.
And that's also what I kind of didn't like about the series.
Sure.
So I think in general, the whole show was absolutely great. It's a masterpiece, and I think it's brilliant. Mm. But
high words.
Yes.
Yes.
But at the end, I kind of thought that the very last episode was very creepy and very suspenseful. But I honestly felt a little let down. I thought it could have been better. And at the very end, I kind of don't want to ruin it, but
that's okay.
Okay.
Just spoiler alert. Spoiler alert.
Yeah. whenever he gets
34 minutes, you should figure out.
It's all spoilers. Yeah.
Whenever he gets stabbed, Matthew McConaughey's character gets stabbed. Yeah. I'm thinking to myself, like, he's dead. And like, it was kind of unrealistic and kind of not.
Yeah.
Kind of not something that I like that they drug it out past that. Sure, I wanted to know more.
This is why she's my favorite lady in the world right now. Keep on talking. Yeah.
But honestly, at that point of the show, I was like, first of all, you're telling me too much unnecessary information.
Right.
But also, I think that they could have done something a little bit more crazy or a little bit, which is what everybody was expecting. And I think they kind of played it a little safe. I did like the twist on what's his face? The guy with the
Marty?
Spaghetti face.
Oh, yeah. The spaghetti monster. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I like that he was talking to the detectives from 2012 and was telling them where to go, giving them directions. And then you find out that he's the one that's behind it and
that's
all that.
That's interesting.
I like that, but
I didn't like that, but like, that's neither here nor there.
I was at that point in the show, I was like, you know.
Oh, sure.
But the very last episode for me was not as great as it could have been. But again, the whole series was so great that I think it made up for
the fact that it
was a little bit weak at the end.
So the last episode is the weakest
link
for you.
And it was so creepy.
Oh, that's true. The whole
with the sister and I just, too much.
Wait, what was the relationship with the sister?
Well,
that they were banging? That's what we heard.
The spaghetti guy was like, tell me more or whatever. And I was first of all, this is not empowering to women.
No.
Second of all, this is gross.
Something was not right about her to begin with.
Oh, yeah. But it was just that whole, it was kind of awkward.
And by gross, you mean hot.
obviously. But it was just so it was off-putting, and I guess that was part of the show that
part of the grittiness.
I did like, but I didn't like it then and there.
Yeah.
And it was, that episode was just
like
not
too
as
unpleasant for you with the brother-sister thing?
Maybe a little, actually.
I think everyone was uncomfortable.
A lot of people who were live casting didn't realize that they were brother and sister.
We realized that right away, though.
You should have realized it right away.
There's no way he's got like a normal girl.
Yeah.
So did you have any complaints in general about the series, Sandykins?
Just that I think the ending could have been better. But again, I don't know if that's a complaint or just like an observation.
Oh, sure. Gotcha.
But
that's not bad. That's not bad, considering it's a show that could have done many things wrong, and that's all you can come up with.
Yeah.
Really.
Well,
so
I think that's why I think so highly of it.
Yeah, it was so good. It was so good. Sam, what you got?
The things I didn't like in general, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So the New Yorker actually had an article about this, and
you fancy
just mentioned it too.
Yeah.
That the women in the entire show are basically like caricatures. Like they don't really seem to have
a lot of that either.
Yeah. They're kind of like, they're definitely stock in my opinion. You know, it's like there's nothing really deep about even the main lady characters.
Yeah, Maggie,
in the movie,
who is Marty's wife.
Who's a fantastic actress in her own right.
Yeah, she did a really good job throughout, and like her character is probably the most developed female character by far. But
sure.
Even then, like her character isn't fleshed out as well as it could be, and all of her responses to stimulus are virtually like you could predict everything she's gonna do.
And I really like that you said that, Sam, because I think that that is something that I didn't really like, is like, where are the women? Why aren't they doing more? And why aren't they bigger? I know it's like the two detectives and they were great.
Sure.
But something I'd like to see in the future would be in the next season, maybe have like a female character that has a huge role.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah.
I think they're going to have to bring lady cops into the mix, if not during the second season, somewhere in the third season.
Yeah. And I mean, like, there's a lot of, not really precedent, but like other shows have done stuff like that, like Law and Order, where they have Gorham and I always forget the lady's name. I only remember Gorham's name because it doesn't sound like a person's name.
Sure.
And like, they do great. And there are a lot of dynamics they could go off of, but it's pretty like noticeable if you're paying attention how all of the girls are either damsels in distress or like bitch characters.
Bitch characters are like
they just don't have a say. They're weak.
Yeah. Yeah, they just need to be banged by a guy. Mm-hmm. Is essentially what it was. Yeah. It's not even like,
and I mean that could be because, you know,
they do need to get banged.
That's just kind of like the era that he's drawing from.
But no,
and that's the type
in
of
the
people.
90s.
Well, no, I mean no, that's the type of people that the detectives are gravitating towards.
Sure. I mean, and I see what you're saying, but I also think that.
There's still Anita Hill. Yeah. That was in the 80s. She's fantastic. But they covered a lot of people who are still
How much they covered in 8 episodes over a span of 17 years. Like, surely there's more women in your life that are doing stuff and that are more important than just they were portrayed.
Oh, sure.
You know what I mean?
You know who Rust's mom was? She sounds like a super lady.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Why is your son such a weirdo?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, so that's what you think. Is that your main complaint?
That's... one of them. The second one is kind of what the Sanakin mentioned at the end of episode 8. Rust's personality basically.
Well, like the last 10 minutes of episode 8, probably what makes episode 8 like a bad episode.
Yeah, like his personality just completely switches.
Yeah, he's like, oh, there's an epiphany or whatever.
Yeah, it was so cheese. Well, he should have. Spoiler alert: he should have died. He should have died.
They both should have died.
It would have been greater.
Both of them to die.
Yeah. Well, they like signed. The way it wound up being was like, okay, both of these guys are going to die. I assumed they were going to have one guy die. Right. And then both of them look like they're going to just die right there. But no, you're going to save both of them.
And another thing is this, they knew that this season was one season with 8 episodes and it was over. So you could have killed them and it would have been great.
Yeah.
You don't have to carry them over.
Yeah.
You're not. So
yeah, I would have had both of them die and had like the black detectives who are in 2012 just
figure it out.
Like, oh, so terrible.
It would have been more epic.
You know?
Basically.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, it would have been more true to the series, I feel like.
Yeah, it was very...
It would have been true to True Detective.
Oh,
pun intended.
God.
Yeah.
Pun intended. Right. No, like, the way it happened was I feel like there was kind of like this... I wonder if in the last episode they had multiple endings, because in some TV series like Dexter, they have multiple endings.
Or movies.
Yeah.
Movies
or movies, too. And with this one, when they realize that so many people love this show... they're like, well, we better make it end on a side that they're all gonna love it.
Yeah, I think part of what they wanted to avoid is
like,
all
don't
the,
kill our favorite characters.
Yeah,
all of the
flack that George R. R. Martin gets for Game of Thrones whenever he kills any character that people get vested in.
They're all disposable.
And
at
I
this
think,
point,
yeah, I think Nick Pizzolatto was like, I'll just kind of avoid that.
Do the opposite
and
of that.
Just have a safe ending that people could be like, oh, that was okay.
Now, I was wondering if there's an alternate ending somewhere.
Yeah.
Something that Sandykins can appreciate.
Yes.
Yeah, because I think in this show, everyone wanted them to either both die or at least one of them die, or at least not come out with such a really weird cheese ending. Because, I mean, yeah, Rust, you know, having his epiphany, that's cool.
Yeah.
But the way it was executed and delivered was like, I am a different person now, Andy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm amazing. Like, that's what he was doing. And
oh,
was
yeah.
Like,
he realized that
why?
There's something beyond this world.
Yeah. It was like, well, you didn't
no
know.
Need
think,
for that. Let's
so,
hear it.
What we previously said was, this is a show where you don't tell the viewers how the characters are or whatever.
Sure.
The last episode for me was like, here is... Matthew McConaughey, now he's great. He's a great person.
They flip-flopped
don't
it.
Tell me. Like, you should have just killed him and we could have been left guessing whatever. And I'm one of those
what
people.
He saw. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm one of those people that's always like, I need the satisfaction at the end
or,
of whatever I'm watching.
Or, you know, it
mm-hmm.
could have been like.
This is not the case here.
It also
oh,
could have
no.
been like
no.
Rust could have died and then just like had like a slight smile, kind of the way Walter did in Breaking Bad. Because
sure.
you could tell that Walt was like. You know, it sucks that he's going to die, and he's bummed out about it. But he's also like, I provided for
spoiler
my family.
Spoiler alert.
I did,
yeah.
I did what I wanted to do from the beginning of this entire, like,
but I agree.
Like,
sure.
thing.
I
so,
agree.
And I think
agree
for
too.
Him, it could be just, you know, being with his daughter, you know?
Yeah.
So.
I think for me, my general complaint would be the ending.
Yeah.
As well, even though episode 8 was my favorite episode. Because it's so exciting to watch.
Yeah, the very ending.
The very end.
Really,
the like the last
ending.
10 minutes
yeah.
of the movie of the show of the show.
Yeah.
But in my least favorite episode was episode 2 or 3.
It's 3.
Episode
3 is the one where nothing happens.
Literally
that was
nothing
my least
happens.
Episode 2. Yeah.
Yeah. 3 literally nothing happens except towards the end where you think they're going to do something.
The shootout.
The shootout was the only thing that happened.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was the only thing that happened, but after that, nothing else happens, right?
That's true.
Which was the only problem with it, because it kicks it off. I feel like if the shootout was
at the end of the episode,
it would have been a better episode.
Yeah.
But three is kind of like disposable for me. And I had, I think I'm talking to my sister, my dad, because he's like, you know, I just saw episode three. And that was the first time you watched any of it. Okay. And I was like, that's not indicative of the series.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because the pacing was off on the third episode, I feel like. Because everything else is very solid.
I mean, it wasn't a bad episode, but it was bad for True Detective.
Oh, I agree.
I think, yeah.
Oh, for sure, for sure. Yeah. Now, we're going to come to the moment of truth, Sandykins. Are you ready? We're going to talk about, on a scale of 1 to 10, mm-hmm. 10 being absolutely perfect mm-hmm. for a TV series. We're talking the series as a whole here with True Detective. Okay? And, you know, like, why it's so important to you or why it's not so important to you, depending on your score.
Okay.
And would you recommend people rent it or like watch it now or, you know, get an HBO subscription HBO and Go. Do like HBO Go or something like that. So let's hear from you. What would you give True Detective on a scale of 1 to 10?
Okay. Well, first, before I tell you, I have to say, like, did y'all hear about how HBO crashed the finale?
Yes, I heard about
the finale.
That.
It was the most viewers, and it crashed, and people were so upset.
HBO Go crashed.
Yeah. Oh, HBO Go crashed.
Yeah,
HBO
Go. But yeah. I just thought that
with
was
Netflix.
Yeah.
But so I just wanted to mention that because I thought that was crazy. But so obviously people were anticipating it.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so I would probably give it, honestly, I would say like a 9.
That's
okay.
Solid.
9 out of 10.
That's solid.
Because I'm someone who, I think the show is great as a whole. I really do. I think it was brilliant. Mm-hmm. Like I said, it was beautifully haunting.
Yeah,
it was.
I agree.
It's like a work of art, and it hasn't been done, I think, the way that it's been done. I haven't seen anything like it for
something you'd only
years.
Get away with on HBO,
right.
probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
so, and I
it's like
I was,
this or like Sex and the City for terribly mm-hmm. haunting, you know?
Yeah. CBS has its own ways. Lines, which comes sort of close, but not quite, because that's episodic each episode.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So I would definitely give it a 9 because I think it was so brilliantly crafted, and there were just some minor things that were kind of off, like the
right.
ending. I didn't give it a perfect 10 because of the ending, I think.
Sure, sure. Yeah.
But like I said, this show, I'm thinking of other shows that I watch that I'm really into.
Yeah.
And I was kind of like, my scaling was kind of rated how I would rate those, mm-hmm. you know, in relation. And I'm thinking, like, this is one of the best shows that I've been watching recently. And that's why I'd give it a 9.
In a long time, yeah.
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 So, and I mean, I love The Walking Dead. I love zombies. I love Bates Motel. Those are all dark shows as well. But I would not give any of them a 9.
You think they're on a different, like,
I think
True Detective is on a different level.
Yeah, I think it's a different level. I think it was so creative, and the way that it was written was great, and the way that it was executed was great.
I agree.
I think it was really true. Another pun
intended. Oh, God.
No, but it
it's
really
a pun
did.
Off by herself.
I know.
Yeah.
but it really did stay true to itself, like, the whole time, except for the ending, which is why I won't give it a perfect. But I recommend it to people everywhere, and I think they should watch it because it's great.
Good, good. Would you buy the Blu-ray when it comes out, or would you just rent the series?
I'm really bad about like buying like actual tangible copies of
sure.
it, but I would definitely get it like on HBO Go or or rent it or something. Yes.
You have to watch it. Yeah. It's a strong endorsement from Sandykins.
Definitely.
Perfect.
Watch it.
Yeah.
Perfect. Let's hear from you, Sam.
Did I give Breaking Bad a 9.5?
You gave Breaking Bad a 9.5.
Okay.
But that was the finale. Was it the whole season?
I thought we were doing the whole series.
The whole series. That was probably the whole series. Let's hear it.
Okay.
You gave Breaking Bad a 9.5.
Yeah. I will give this a 9 also.
Yes.
Because I really did like the show. I didn't like it as much as Breaking Bad because I love Breaking Bad. And Breaking Bad is also like 40 times
feel
longer
like it's,
than this.
Yeah, show. Apples and oranges at that point. You have so much development.
But
yeah.
You have a lot more in that show just because it's a much longer show. But True Detective was really good. The series was really good. I mean, we mentioned all of the good and bad things. I would recommend probably to get the Blu-ray because Blu-rays look
this
nice.
Is a show that I feel like
and yeah, you should probably see it.
If you, me, and Sandykins got together again and watched the whole series again, we'd watch it as if we'd never seen it before because there's so much to watch, so much to soak up.
Yeah. There's a lot of Nick puts a lot of the showrunner and Gary Fukunaga. Carrie. Carrie Fukunaga did a great job at having a lot of detail in the show, but not having the detail seem obvious. Mm-hmm. Like, there are little things, like, I think it's the at the end of episode 5, whenever he goes back, whenever Russ goes back to the school and, like, looks at stuff, and, like, there are like, images that show up when he's looking at the school for the second time. And, like, a lot of the, and that imagery has to do with stuff from Nick Pizzolatto's book and the Chambers book. But, like, you don't know that. You're just like, oh, that's a weird thing to do.
Yeah.
Why are you doing this? You know?
For sure.
Yeah.
Just little things like that I thought were cool. It did a really good job at making it seem suspenseful and creepy throughout, because I also thought that, like, they could have gone, like, a slightly supernatural way with it. And I'm glad they didn't, because I think Supernatural way might have been a little cheesy.
It'd have been cheesy,
but,
yeah.
No, but not necessarily bad. Just like, kind of like, oh, this is like an episode of Supernatural now.
Yeah.
Know? Basically, like CW territory.
But everyone's doing that.
That's true. It's par for the course.
And that's because there's like a lot of like really creepy occult stuff that they keep throwing in.
Yeah.
And it works for it, especially toward the end, because it's not, you know, as predictable. But so I would give it a 9. What's you, Andy?
Yeah, see, I think I'm going to have to give it a 9. Yes. I was going to give it... I honestly thought Sandykins was going to give it a 10. And I don't know why.
I thought she was going to give it a
9.5 or something like that. Yeah. Because, well, you know, it's her first time on the podcast, and I know she really liked it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the ending, the very end of episode 8, which is my favorite episode, but the very end of it, did ruin it for me.
Yeah.
Because it was so off kilter from what they were going to do.
Yeah, kind of anticlimactic in a way.
Well, yeah. Well, they could have ended it with them... I don't want to ruin it, but they didn't have to end it in the hospital. That's what I'm saying.
No, they could have ended it earlier than that.
Yeah.
Could have ended it earlier.
Yeah, so...
I thought they were going to, because it cuts to black.
And cuts to black.
Oh, and then I'm like, God damn it.
I would have loved to be, like, lost and kept in the dark about both of those guys.
Yeah.
You know, I don't need to know about... you don't need a perfect bookend to this series.
Uh-huh. That's exactly what I think.
And that's the whole thing. With the whole series, you're set up for them letting you know, you guys probably aren't going to have a perfect bookend to the series, right?
And I think you accept that earlier on, and you're like, but you know what? This show is so great, and I know it, and I'm okay with it, and it's going to be great.
Yeah.
But then they give you way too much at the end, and you're like, well, like, you kind of went too far.
Exactly. Mark my words, there's an alternate ending somewhere.
I'm sure there has to be.
Just because it seems, well, there has to
be. The alternate ending could be them just screaming up into the sky.
Oh, and the flare?
Yeah, with the flare.
Yeah.
That's what I was thinking. They should have ended it right there.
I do too. That would have been perfect. Great. Or at the hospital, like right when he wheels him out.
Oh, sure.
They just wheel him out.
Yeah. And the whole show makes you think, so I kind of wanted the ending to make me think too. Like,
right.
That it can be interpreted this way or that way.
It's open. Yeah. It's open for you to...
Is this the top fall over?
Yeah.
Yeah. I was so thinking Inception. I really was. Like, I was thinking it could have been great, like that ending, but, you know...
For sure.
Wait, can I just make a disclaimer to my endorsement?
Make a disclaimer to your
endorsement. Okay, so I don't recommend that if you're a wimp like me, I don't recommend that you watch this alone at night, because that last episode, even though it wasn't that great, that guy with the scars,
creepy.
So creepy. And I definitely had nightmares for a couple of days.
Well, it's because he's in your closet waiting for you to get back
and
home.
I'm not even kidding you. Like, I was so creeped out, like having to drive home and like having to just be in my apartment by myself, like, it's just so suspenseful, and you're in that zone when you get back.
Oh, fuck
and,
yeah.
And then there's this guy who's like just perverted and so weird and so on a different level.
I'm standing right next to you.
Yeah.
Sorry, my bad.
That's cruel.
Yeah, it's me.
But yeah, so right, I would just disclaimer a little bit of that. Just be careful, because you will get nightmares.
Watch
I
it with friends.
Did.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's a straight 9 for me too, basically because of what you guys said. Episode 3 is kind of a buzzkill, but once you start 4 and beyond, 1 and 2 are compelling, 3 is meh.
Or alternatively, you could just, you know, wait to watch Girls and Looking right after True Detective.
Yeah. Exactly. This show, I felt like, was really good. And when I watched, I think it was after the first episode, that's when I texted Sandykins.
Yes.
Because I was like, hey, this show is great. Walking Dead's happening after. Double feature of a lifetime.
Yeah, and I think too, what's funny is Andy had just started Walking Dead and like watched all of it
during Christmas break.
Yeah. And he was kind of shocked, because I'm not the kind of person that usually likes violence or like weird gory things or creepy suspenseful dark stuff.
Yeah,
but I think that these shows, like, it's like art. Like, I just love it.
This is creepy on another level.
Yeah,
yeah. Even when you compare it to Walking Dead,
plus,
you're
there's
right.
Not, yeah, there's not like really gross violent stuff in most of the episodes.
It's mainly like it's just so
like
creepy.
It's just like really unnerving stuff. Like, you know, there could be something you're gross on and violent edge, like yeah. in 10 minutes.
Time. Yeah,
it's but unconventional it's and there. Just dark.
Yeah, so. There's nothing, and you know, something else that I feel like is masterful in the whole arc of the story is that even though when you start off not knowing everything and you have questions in your mind, in due time, your questions will be answered.
Yes,
you know. And I know you're just starting Game of Thrones, Sandy mm-hmm. Kins, which is kind of like the same way. But it's almost like I like True Detectives.
Ooh, I'm excited.
I like True Detectives a lot. And I think I like it better than I like Game of Thrones, at least for the first season. Because Game of Thrones, the first five episodes, I was sitting there. I'm like, what am I watching? Like, it's cool, everything going on, but I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
But at the end of that season, you understand the whole world that's yeah. going on, what's going. But with True Detective, you're watching it, you're enjoying it. I'm glad you got to be a part of this. I'm
Me
glad
too.
We watched it. Thanks to Jeremy, who is not here right now, but he had the HBO.
Thanks, yeah. Jeremy.
Woo! Yeah, yeah. And I guess we'll see you probably here at the next Walking
yes.
Dead.
Thanks for having podcast. Me. It's been fun.
No, you're a pro. You're a pro already.
Yeah, yes,
very good.
I'm excited.
Very good. Yeah.
Well, thanks everybody for listening. We really appreciate it. Check out True Detective if you haven't already, and tell us what you think about it if you liked
for
it.
For sure.
If you didn't. And yeah, have a good one. Stay classy.